A series for you at this time all this week on the show, which we're calling Handle With Care. Sometimes when a young person's growing up, the family situation leaves them vulnerable and can't be allowed to continue. So the authorities have to step in and take care of them instead of mum and dad, usually just for a bit. In West Berkshire at the moment, there are 130 children who are defined as being looked after by the local council. That's just one bit of Berkshire, so it's hundreds. In the past few weeks, I've spent quite a lot of time with people who are growing up or have just come out of care. And hearing their stories has been quite an experience. As always, the stereotypes don't necessarily hold true. We've had people tell us that growing up in a children's home or growing up with foster parents was absolutely brilliant and they loved it, certainly by comparison with the experiences they had with their own family. For some people, it hasn't worked out so well. I'm going to share those stories with you this week, and of course we want yours. So did you grow up in care? Are you a foster parent? 0845 900 1041. One thing that I've learned already is that when this system kicks in, people's lives change for good in an instant. We're going to give a voice to children who've grown up in the care system on The Pete Show on BBC Radio Berkshire all this week in our project Handle With Care.
As a child, you have the right to be able to be at peace with your story.
Fair enough, you don't have your parents behind you, but we do have a voice.
You with the sad.
They're scared of what people might think of them if they know what they've been through. I am scared of what people might think.
Hard to take courage.
My mum passed away. That's really what got me into social services, is my mum dying. My auntie couldn't handle it, and she ended up putting me and my twin brother in foster care.
But I see your true colours shining.
On the day that I got taken into care, we had the social services and police at the door. I didn't know where I was going. I just knew that I was not going to be living with my mum anymore.
They were just like any other mum and dad, I used to think. Why would you just pick up a child and then just ditch them? You don't know what you've done wrong. You've lived with these people all your life. You think they're your family. And obviously I'm not their family, otherwise they would be in contact.
Show me a smile, then. Don't be unhappy.
When I went to go and live with my foster carers, I felt alive for the first time than I have in a long time.
I've never been so cared for in my life, and I've never had that much attention. It was like a Christmas morning to me, one of my best Christmas day ever.
Makes you more independent, stronger, but not changing for the world. It's made me the person that I am now.
Some of the stories you got coming up for you this week of kids who grew up in care in whatever circumstances, for whatever reason. If you've got a story, 0845 900 1041. We can change your name if you want us to. We'd just like to hear what happened and to hear the reality of growing up in care. The good, the bad, the ugly. 0845 900 1041. What does it mean? That's the first question, I suppose. As part of our Handle With Care project, our team has been working in Berkshire, spending time with children in care over several months. Let's just define what a looked-after child is. Jeremy Cross is director of a fostering agency and with me in the studio. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello. Hi.
So tell me what the process is then. How does a child end up in care?
Obviously, it can be through a variety of means, from somebody identifying that a child's needs are not being met. That can be a school or a concerned individual, which leads to the social services becoming involved.
So there's got to be a whistleblower of some sort, often an official person, you know, a teacher or a doctor or someone like that will come across the child and think something's not right there.
Often that is the case, although there are cases where young people themselves have contacted social workers. I've worked with a young girl who contacted social services basically to find help for her and her brother.
And also the family, I suppose. I was quite surprised when I spent time in one of the social services departments in our area last week, just how often families volunteer children into care and how willing they are to kind of sign their kids over to be looked after by someone else because they know there's a problem.
Yes, certainly lots of relatives will see there is a problem and recognise that they aren't the people in the position to help, but desperately want help for their own friends, children, or their own grandchildren, things like that.
So once a problem has been identified, what then happens? What is the process of being put into care?
Then the local authorities will make an assessment of that child's needs and then set about trying to find a place for that child. They will obviously look within their own provisions, see if there's anything that they can find. But as with our own organisation, independent organisation, often there isn't enough provision within the local authorities. And then it's quite quite a cold process in some respects, in that we as independent agencies will receive several emails a day requesting, can we find a match for a young person? And we will get an outline.
It's come
from
councils.
Yes, the councils will... The local authority, social service department, will send out a list of children whose needs they are seeing, if anybody can provide the appropriate match for. And then the independent agencies then have to then see if they've got a match for their carers, and several agencies will do so. And then the local authorities will assess what they think is the best match.
Because, I mean, sometimes by the time the council gets to find out there's something wrong with a child, there's something really wrong. I mean, I've spent quite a bit of time in this, you know, researching this and looking into this in recent weeks, and there's very little that I want to actually say about specific cases I've, you know, happened to come across in the line of doing that, because that wouldn't be right. But in that period of time, there was a teenage girl in this area being raped by her dad repeatedly, and that came to the attention of social services, and social services clearly had to get her out of that situation that day immediately. Who knows how long that had been going on, anything like that. I mean, unbelievable to see this going on before my eyes as a dad, I tell you. That's the dramatic end of it, I suppose, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. And we do get, sometimes you'll get a phone call or an email, but often a phone call at 4 o'clock on a Friday saying, we need something now, what can you provide, have you got anybody? And we and several other organisations will all be ringing around trying to see if any of us can provide anything, even if it's just for that one night, until something can be put in place.
I mean, you know this kind of thing happens, but I'm breathing more deeply just going back to, you know, this experience of finding out that this is happening, like, now, today, here, down the road, and that, you know, you guys are trying to, you know, deal with the consequences of that and, you know, react in an emergency service kind of way to that sort of thing.
Yes, as I say, it does go on. Obviously, ideally, you like to have a bit of time to make it more of a planned move and to do all the work you can. Everybody always asks for as much information, but because of the sort of situations you just described, frequently you are going in there and just finding out everything as you go along.
We're going to meet Lem now. Lem Sisse, one of the people who's been working with us on our project Handle With Care. We're going to talk a little bit about the creative work you've been doing with some of the people involved in the project, Lem, later. But you yourself grew up in care. Tell us a little bit about your story and how you ended up in care, Lem.
Well, my mum came to this country to study. In fact, she came to this area. She went to New Bold College. She wanted me fostered in the late 60s, and she approached a social worker, and she asked the social worker, could he have me fostered while she studied? And the social worker gave me to foster parents, and it's very different to how it was now. And he said to them, treat this as an adoption. And I never saw my mother again. The foster parents kept me for 11 years as I thought they were my mum and dad, and they said they would be with me forever. And at 11 years old, they put me into children's homes and said they'd never write to me or contact me. And
grief.
And I've proved all this through documentaries.
How did that feel? You're an 11-year-old.
Yeah.
And your parents reject you.
Yeah. It's still with me today. I think sometimes... Well, I think that you can evaluate the time you had in care in your adult life.
Right.
Not in your childhood. It was
just
a shock.
But just going back to the beginning of the process, though.
To go back to the beginning of the process, which is something that I do every day of my life, is it was traumatic, immensely traumatic. They said they would never write to me. They were very, very, very religious. I'm not against religion, but they had ideas that the devil was inside of me, and they convinced me that I didn't want to be with them. And they said they would never write to me, and they never did. And I was left in children's homes.
So have you had any contact with them since?
When I left the children's home, I contacted them because they were my mum and dad, and they sat me in the front room, sort of like I was an official visitor. You know, the front room where
the posh room.
Yeah, the posh room. It was the most bizarre thing.
It's quite dusty because no one ever goes in there.
Absolutely, it was. It was a dusty, dusty, dusty place. And and that's it. 11 years old, no birthdays, no Christmases, no weekends, no... I realised at 18 that I didn't know anybody that knew me for longer than a year.
Your experience in care was basically in a home.
A series of children's homes.
Rather than in foster care.
I was fostered for 11 years by those foster parents.
Then
I was in care as well. The government was basically my parent, which means that Margaret Thatcher was actually my mother.
I wouldn't have put you two together, but I could be wrong. Well, I'll judge when I get to know you better. Was it a good experience, you know, putting aside for a second the emotion of being rejected by your own family? Was the care part okay?
I was rejected by a foster family. I was named after a social worker illegally, Norman. My mother had me fostered for a short period of time for the first 11 years. She wanted me fostered for a few months while she studied. The social worker had no intention of giving me back to her. He named me after himself, Norman. The foster parents put me into care. I was kept in care for 5 years. I was in five different children's homes. I was in a lockup with a padded cell. I left at 18 years old. I was given my birth certificate because there was no family to give it to. And my birth certificate had my name on it, Lem Sisse. And from that day on, I started to search for my own family. So, no, it was...
And Margaret Thatcher was my mum. That's quite a life story. More with Lem coming up. In the next few minutes, we're going to spend hearing about the experiences of one person who's just come through the care system in Berkshire. She was taken into care aged 12 because her mum was suffering with schizophrenia. She was taken to the South Coast for a bit, then brought back to a children's home in Reading, where she stayed for 6 years. And she's pretty proud of the time she spent there. This is Samina's story.
This girl I know needs some shelter. She don't believe anyone can help her.
On the day that I got taken into care, I was very angry. My emotions were absolutely everywhere. They were up in the air and everything. You don't wanna get involved. I just saw my mum packing my bag of just clothes, towels and everything. And in the end, I just got in the car. I didn't know where I was going. I just knew that I was not going to be living with my mum anymore and not seeing my family. I was crying quite a lot on the way there because I was scared and that. There was a car load of people. There was a driver, passenger and someone sat next to me. And then in the end, we end up in Bognor Regis.
I stand in front of you. I take the force of the blow.
It felt like a little prison in a way, Bognor Regis. It just felt like a little unit, like we've done something wrong, therefore you're getting punished, therefore you're in a unit. When social services were telling me and my carers explained to me that, look, your mum's not very well, she's schizophrenic, I didn't really believe them, because I've always seen my mum as a mum figure, like really lovely, talkative, really friendly. So it's quite a shock, quite a big surprise. I wasn't having phone contact with my mum or any of my family members. My mum would call at the children's home, see how I am, but I couldn't speak to anything. And then I remember the first time I was allowed to see two of my aunties, and we all cried, absolutely fell into tears, and we was in the family centre, and it was just so lovely just seeing them again.
I'll stand in front of you, I'll take the force of the blow.
Fair enough, you don't have your parents behind you, but you can still be successful without them.
Sometimes you look so smart.
The children's home that were there for me was just there for 100%. And I just, it's just really good. I'm so thankful I was in there. It's just a family-oriented environment, like just making sure that you're safe and just loving, caring. Just everything that a child needs after going through such a traumatic time. Just absolutely fantastic experience. Will not change for the world. It's made me the person that I am now.
Samina's story on the BBC Radio Berkshire. Frank's in Reading. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Andrew.
You grew up in Care.
Yes, I did, Andrew. I'd like to say first that I'm an OAP, 67 years old.
Uh-huh.
And the point I'm trying to make is that how it affects your whole life. You hear people saying, oh, yeah, you've had a bad upbringing. That's no excuse. That's no excuse. It really is. I mean, I've had 41 different locations that I've lived at during my life.
41?
41. I did a quick jot on paper. I could probably add a few more to it.
How old were you when you went into care then, Frank?
3 years old.
Three. And do you know what had happened in your family that led to it?
Yes, I was in a farmhouse in Cornwall, and I was taken away because of poverty. The toilet was a little shed at the bottom of the garden in a bucket that got emptied once a week. There was no running water, no heat, no electricity, and I had to walk 2.5 miles to school. So I was taken away because of those conditions.
And as an adult now, looking back on it, what impact has this upbringing that you're telling us about had on your personality, on your ability to, form relationships with other people as an adult, Frank?
Well, I don't feel any security whatsoever when I'm in a relationship. I always think, oh, you're going to be like all the others. You're going to go as things have done in my life. I don't feel any stability whatsoever. I feel that I'm floating sort of thing. I can't sort of put my feet on the ground and firmly stay there and say, this is where I am.
Well, it's a bit like sort of no one's on your side. No one can really be trusted.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because, ultimately people always let you down.
Yeah, they have done all my life, and I always have that in the back of my mind when I meet somebody new now. I met a lady about 2 years ago, gorgeous lady, wonderful, we were great, getting on great. But when she saw the insecurity, when she saw that it wasn't stable, it put her on edge a little bit, it broke the relationship up.
She ran a mile, basically.
Yeah, the point I'm trying to make is that it does affect you all through your life, even though you don't want it to. It is there, and it comes out.
What, in terms of your childhood, being moved around different places,
mm-hmm.
I'm very keen to know whether you look back on that with any fondness, with happiness, or whether it was just all a nightmare or what, because the sense of people growing up in care is like you've got to feel sorry for them, and I'm sure that's not the full story by any means.
Everything with me, it was a nightmare. I tried to look for nice little bits that I can reflect on, and there are none whatsoever. When I went with foster parents, I considered that to be that I was a meal ticket for them. They got paid for having me. And that's all there was. There was no love, there was no emotion, no affection, no goodbye even. When I went away to join the army, it was helped me to pack my suitcase and saw me out the front door.
And then I think sometimes it's like, sometimes, you know what, we'll hear this week, sometimes it's like that now, that people have that sort of quite cold relationship with foster parents now, and often, people have said to me, putting this together, that, they just absolutely wish their foster parents were their real family because they get so much from them that they never got from their own relations, so people have different experiences, don't they?
Yeah, I'm the opposite to that. Very much the opposite. I mean, I don't want to dwell on it too much, but they would stand at the bottom of the stairs and whose turn is it, yours or mine, with a belt, because I was 2 minutes after 8 o'clock getting in.
Mm.
So, and I basically ran away and joined the army.
Because you wanted to get away from them?
I just wanted to get away from them. And when I was in the army, I received a phone call to say to get home and see your mother. I wasn't allowed to see her until I was 18. And I said to the policeman at the other end of the call, I said, well, look, this may seem odd to you, but where is home? So he told me the address of where my mother was, and I went home and I sat at the side of the bed while she died, and yet I didn't feel that it was my mother, didn't feel that it was my flesh and blood, it was just a woman.
Because you just hadn't had that, the chance to form all that relationship with her.
That's right, and I think that's what's come through with me. Everybody has just been somebody. It's nobody of any feeling or anything.
Do you think about this every day?
Well, I wouldn't say every day, but certainly say 2 or 3 times a week I have a quiet moment and I dwell on it. I do go back, which is wrong. I shouldn't. I should go forward.
Frank, it's really brave of you and the other people who've already spoken to us to take part in this, and I'm grateful that you called. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
Well, Lem Sisse in the studio. You grew up in Kerry, as you've been telling us. What do you make of Frank's story? Because you're then nodding and smiling like you're really relating to what Frank was saying.
I just totally get it. I think, you know, sort of kids in Kerry are like superheroes. They're like Harry Potter was a foster child, Jane Eyre, Superman, Oliver Twist, Lisbeth Salander from the Millennium series. Superman was a foster child. Moses was a foster child. We are part of an incredible tradition. Yeah. So when I hear somebody talking about their story, saying that it's with them in their adult life, I think of a superhero.
But it's interesting, though, because I suspect, and I might be wrong, I suspect what the whole thing conjures up for people who don't have the experience is charity case, you know, someone to feel sorry for.
It's a shame. It's a shame. And I think a lot of the reason that people feel that way is because they feel like they can't relate to what that person's story is. The fact is, trauma happens, and people live with trauma as adults. I am incredibly successful in the career that I have, travelled all over the world. I've done very well for myself, if you like, if you want to view it like that. That doesn't mean to say that I did not have a traumatic existence, that I had a terrible childhood. I don't need your pity. That's about you. That's got nothing to do with me.
Well, it's because I'm coming rather late to your story, isn't it? I'm just processing what you're saying.
I don't need your pity. I am resolute in the fact that my story is what it is, and as an adult, I will not be ashamed of it. It is what it is, I'm afraid. These things do happen. As much as in families, we'd like to think and sometimes pretend that these traumatic events do not happen. Sometimes in our own families, we isolate the person who has suffered from trauma as if they are not a member, a true member of the family. The fact is, these things happen. I am not ashamed of what I have been through, and I will continue carrying my story throughout my adult life in its success. One does not contradict the other.
Does it have an impact on your ability to form relationships with other people in the way that Frank says? Because that seems to be pretty typical from the people I've spoken to.
We all bring our stories to any relationship we have, whether we have been brought up in what we think of as a classically good family, or whether we've had what is an overtly traumatic experience. The fact is that we, as children who've been in care, often have to articulate darkness, which a lot of families... A family is just a series of disputed memories over a lifetime. And the fact is, a child in care is taken away from the right of disputing.
Sure, yes, I got you. Let's bring in Jeremy on this. We've got with us in the studio as well, Jeremy Cross, who runs a fostering agency. Some of the issues that have come out in discussion with Frank, with Lem, with Samina this morning, ones you're working with all the time, I guess.
Yes, and it's finally been recognised that there is a lot more work to be done around attachment and loss, and just how important it is for a young person to form steady, stable attachments. Obviously,
like relationships with, you know, with other people. Because Frank, you know, he's as he said himself, an OAP now, still can't do it.
No, and that was very, very sad to hear his story and to hear what's been happening to him throughout his life.
Can I just say something? Because it's as if we're pretending that as a child, you grow into an adult and you somehow become disconnected from your childhood. As an adult, your childhood is consolidated in who you are now, sat talking to me. So, in other words, your childhood is you're constantly reminded of it throughout your adult life. When you have children, you're reminded of what you were like as a child. So a child who's been in care is consistently reminded throughout their adult life, birthdays, Christmases, weekends, relationships, of the experience they had as a child. Mm. And if it's traumatic, that trauma returns.
How common would it be now, Jeremy, for someone in care like Frank to feel that the reason that they were being looked after is because the foster parents were being paid for it?
There is a lot of talk around that, and you sometimes still hear that from young people and people in care saying, well, you're doing this because you're getting paid for it. And there is certainly a financial element to it.
It's a job to an extent.
To an extent it is a job, and to an extent it needs to be recognised as a job, because the person is being asked to do a professional piece of work, which has become far more professional. And I know that annoys some people. Some people believe you should do it just for love. what's really needed is the balance. You need to have the loving care, but also recognise this is a professional piece of work that needs recognition and needs funding to do so. But that is very hard for the foster carers sometimes, because they've often said to me, on the one hand, you're asking me to love and care for this child, but on the other hand, you're asking me not to get so involved that I get so overattached that I can't make professional decisions and help them to move on when
it's
time. A lot
of rules as well, increasing number of kind of rules and regulations about what you can do, what you can't do. So to an extent, again, foster parents I've met are being asked to treat their foster children like their own, but in the same breath, say, oh, but don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that, because that will be treating them like your own, and that's not allowed.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of pressure to try and change some of this, even the idea that you have to get permission to get a child's to have a haircut, or any of the things that we would take normally for granted, the child constantly has to get permission from a social worker to see if it's okay to do ordinary things.
Like a sleepover.
Yeah, like a sleepover. Yeah, so I mean, there's a child the other day who was talking about how they'd missed out on a school trip because they hadn't managed to get the okay from the appropriate social worker in time to get this trip in. So those things are still happening, but the Fostering Network is working hard to try and empower foster carers to have more rights, to be able to treat the children they're with as though they were their own children and give them the same kind of opportunities.
No doubt, there's, you know, good and bad in foster parents. I met an absolutely inspirational woman last week who's fostered 50 kids over decades, and, you know, you just see the passion that she's got for it, and the, you know, the more troubled and difficult the child's background is, the more of a challenge it is for her to try and invest all her time and love into that child and see what she can achieve. And no doubt there are less positive stories as well, like there are in any area of life, I suppose.
It's also quite tricky for the carers sometimes as well, because a lot of children these days still have regular contact with their actual parents. They're not just completely separated. So there are lots of meetings that go on which help with that attachment thing that we were talking about earlier. But the child is then sort of yo-yoing between attachments and feelings for their foster carer, and then meeting with their original parent, and then having to deal with the fact that that parent can't hold them anymore, and then going back to the carers and all sorts of emotional issues.
One thing we haven't mentioned yet as part of this project, Handle With Care, where we've been spending time with kids who are in care, just coming out of care in our area, is the use of creative arts, the use of creative writing, that kind of stuff to, I guess, help these individuals come to terms with what's happened to them, to express how they feel about their own life story so far. This is something you do, Lem, in working with children in care.
Yes.
To get them to kind of, you know, think it through, I suppose.
Yeah. Yes. I'm a poet by trade, and a playwright, and people turn often to poetry when they are utterly alone and they have a will and a need to express themselves. And for some reason, we do it in poetry. You know, we do it on gravestones, it's in birthday cards, on Valentine's Day, etc.
Because I suppose is it easier to express yourself creatively than it is to sort of sit and talk about it, to talk about how you feel somehow. It feels like doing it through a medium somehow, doesn't it?
That's an absolutely perfect description, actually, in that we are all born creative individuals, and we spend our life learning not to be, except for when we really need it. You know, when we need a bridge between our physical self and something else, something bigger than all of us. And a lot of kids in care actually do turn to writing poetry to express how they feel. And it's quite a wonderful, wonderful thing. The imagination is a landscape which is endless and limitless and utterly original.
And they've got an example for us in a second or two.
Uh-huh.
So pull your poem out, and we're going to hear that in a moment. So this morning we talked about what being in care means, and we talked about how, taken into care, children's lives can change in an instant. We heard Lem's story, we heard Frank's story from Reading, we heard Samina's story. Tomorrow we're going to talk a bit more about what it means to a child's identity to be taken into the care system, and why so many people feel the absolute compelling need to find out about their birth family, to find out about their own roots. So we'll have much more of this tomorrow morning from 9 o'clock on The Peach Show. And if you sort of reflect on it over the next 24 hours, if you've got this experience of having grown up in care, we really want your story as part of it, and you'd be able to ring in or email and share it that way with us. But to finish for today, Lem Sisse is here with one of the poems that's been put together by one of the youngsters in care we've been working with.
This poem is called Controlled Explosions. Controlled explosions, picked up in anticipation and dropped in greater disappointment by distressed couples searching for their own intimate luggage. The suitcase has been tampered with and rummaged through, doesn't know where it's come from, nor where it's going to.
its dog-eared flight tags lost in streams of weaving conveyor belts, its broken zips, open lips too tired to beg the desperate duets. Ham-fisted and impatient, they fumble inside the hammered leather, finding in someone else's belongings an unforgiving unfamiliarity. They wash their hands clinically, forget about mending it, and disappear. As time passes, the suitcase becomes battered, bruised, stubbornly jamming the conveyor belts at the airport, reminding families to grip their suitcases and step politely over before guilt or fear sets in. Someone reports the problem. Tannoy's whisper. Security arrives. Order and authority descends, causing disorder and panic amongst the passing. This case is the lost cargo of international departures, with broken zips and hidden padlocked dust-collecting pockets. It may explode, for all we know, at any time. Carefully, cordons are placed around the area to make sure everyone's covered. All the conveyor belts grind to a mournful halt. The airport gathers quietness and a sweeping hush blows. Outside, a professional looks confidently at camera. It's news. I've been reliably informed the controlled explosion shall begin shortly.
Handle with Care continues tomorrow morning at 9 on BBC Radio Berkshire. Thanks, guys.